The Spectator magazine is home to wonderful writing, insightful analysis, and unrivaled books and arts reviews. Subscribe today for just £12 and receive a 12-week subscription in print and online. Alongside that, you get a £20 John Lewis or Waitrose voucher. Go to spectator.co.uk/voucher.
Hello and welcome to Coffee House Shots. I'm James Heal and I'm joined today by Katie Bulls and Michael Gove. Now, in this week's Spectator, the special Easter edition, both Katie and Michael sat down for an interview with Wes Streeting, the Health Secretary. Katie, what were the top lines from it?
The top lines? Well, it was quite an expansive interview in the sense that we talked about NHS reform. He talked about, a big shake-up, about the need for devolution and so forth. But then he also talked about his faith, how Christianity was something he'd found not really through his parents. If anything, it had to push to be baptized, go to church and so forth. But then as he came to terms with his homosexuality, he then felt further away from God and has since come back thanks to Justin Welby, amongst others. Mm. And then we also got on to Game of Thrones.
Yep.
And I think one of the lines that's been picked up is Wes Streeting has been facing a threat in his seat from pro-Gaza independence. His majority is only about 500. He almost had the fate of Jonathan Ashworth on election night. You know, someone who's expected to have a big job in cabinet and lost to a pro-Gaza independent. But he tells the Spectator, I think for the first time, that no matter what happens, he is standing in that seat at the next election. So we can hold him to that.
And of course, Michael, I mean, Wes Streeting and his mission are going to be key to the success or failure of this government. He gives you an update on sort of saying that we've got 2 million more appointments in the NHS within our first year. They've made it, he says, within 7 months rather than the full 12 months. But how likely is it that his public sector reform agenda succeeds given the importance of the health service to voters?
Well, his fate is absolutely central to the government's own destiny as well. We know that the three issues that matter most, come what may, are immigration, the cost of living, and the fate of the NHS. And certainly it was the length and the number of people on waiting lists at the last election, consequence of COVID to an extent, which was very difficult for the government of which I was part. And the expectation in, not just in Labour circles, but amongst the population, is that a Labour government will invest in the NHS in order to make sure that those waiting lists are reduced, that more people are seen more quickly, and that we see a restoration of confidence in the NHS. The high watermark of confidence in the NHS was at the end of the Blair-Brown years, and that followed both investment and reform. And some of the people who are influencing Wes Streeting now are people who were working with Blair and Brown at that time. Alan Milburn, the former health secretary, and a figure called Paul Corrigan, who has near legendary status within the Labour Party as a no-nonsense reformer. For Wes Streeting, it's incredibly helpful to have those people there. They are, like him, happy warriors who are keen to stress that change in the NHS is necessary if it's going to deliver. But inevitably, that also creates some concern and some suspicion, both amongst the unions, who worry about whether or not these changes portend both greater accountability and underperforming people losing their jobs, and also perhaps even a greater role for the private sector. And they also create some unease amongst people on the left within the Labour Party, because even though Wes Streeting is very careful to stress that he is supportive of Andy Burnham, that he enjoys working with those trade unions like Unison, nevertheless, so much of what he's doing is Blairism coded that inevitably there will be people within the Labour Party who will regard what he's doing with a level of suspicion.
And of course, Michael, you say that, you know, Wes Streeting is the happy warrior. It's not just the NHS he's taking the fight to on. It's also reform. And elsewhere, in her final edition for The Spectator, Katie also writes the politics column, exhibiting her Stakhanovite work ethic. And she talks about that sort of reform more focused on. Wes Streeting, obviously, has very much been the messenger thus far in taking the fight to reform on the NHS. How much of a battleground is the NHS going to be between Labour and the reform come the next election?
I think Labour certainly see it as one of their strongest attack lines when it comes to how to bring down Nigel Farage. One of the things Nigel Farage spoke to me about for this column was how, when he goes to run for the by-election, he's saying, oh, they're telling everyone that I'm going to charge them, 20 grand for a new hip. Absolute rubbish. But it's clearly rattling reform a bit that this NHS line is being pushed so hard by Labour. And Wes Streeting is seen as one of the most efficient messengers. I mentioned Jonathan Ashworth earlier. He will be on a podcast for The Spectator in a few days' time. But he is working on lots of the lines and where you attack reform. So at Labour Together, working with Number 10. So there's already a bit of a reform unit. I think other places they might want to go is trying to depict Nigel Farage as a Tory. Yes, but also just as an agent of the Tories. So can you get to a point where it looks as though reform ushers the Tories back in? Because I think there are some in Labour who say that we shouldn't overstate the threat of reform to Labour. I mean, let's see in the local elections next month. That should give us a real taste. But they say they still think more reform votes are coming from the Tories and from Labour. Their aim is to keep their Labour voters, to stop them going over. But they do accept that their base could see reform as an alternative to Labour, but they think those same voters are allergic to the Tories. So therefore, can you somehow merge the two as one brand? I think, as we discussed with Kate Andrews recently, I think it is hard to do in some ways because Nigel Farage so frequently is incredibly rude about the Tories and has done for some time.
And Michael, you obviously were in charge of, most notably, the Education Department, reforming minister there. How do you think Wes's model or his efforts in government contrast to some of the others? Who do you think are the most encouraging ones in terms of public sector reformers?
Well, again, I neutral listeners will have to take everything I say with a huge pinch of sodium chloride because I'm very biased on this. But I do think that the Streeting approach of saying we want to devolve more power to the front line, but there will be sharper accountability. So we trust you as professionals to innovate, to be more entrepreneurial in how you provide services. But the consequences of failure are that we will shuffle out, we will move out, we will sack underperformers. I think that is the right way to go. I remember when we were in government, there was a reluctance on the part of NHS England and others to say to chief executives of failing trusts, that's it. They would tend to be shuffled into another job somewhere within the NHS in a process known as the dance of the lemons. And I think that Wes Streeting wants to make sure that lemons are squeezed out of the system. I think that's the right approach. And as we say, Wes Streeting was careful not to invite comparisons with anyone else. But as we say in the column, in the interview, I should say, there is a contrast. There is a contrast with Bridget Phillipson, most notably, who is seeking a greater degree of central control, indeed even prescribing the fact that there can only be three items of uniform that a school can require of its students. That degree of micromanagement is a move in a different direction.
And I think for all our praise of Wes Streeting, I mean, the jury is still out on, you know, a lot of this stuff, because there is just, you know, there are promising steps. And, you know, on the day we visited his office and I admired the Spectator on the walls, the leader that I've been questioning of his approach, which now he sees as wants to go further of. He was talking about a waiting list going down and so forth and had some good news. But you look at how that compares to what the IFS has expected and so forth. You know, it's not yet a huge success story. I think there are promising signs, but certainly lots of Wes Streeting's colleagues look at him and do see a man who receives quite a lot of media attention, who's often seen as the golden boy of Number 10. I think there can be a frustration amongst some of the policy special advisors that because Wes Streeting has a direct line to Morgan McSweeney, you know, he's so close with some of the inner group, you know, are they all as needed as they would be otherwise? But I think those who are not in the complete devoted to Wes Streeting Forever Club will say a lot of talk so far, still more action to be done, even on things like abolishing NHS England.
Yes, I know there is an element of tall poppy syndrome, but also it's the case that there are people on the left in the Labour Party, even people in the centre of the Labour Party, who say, look, if you actually want to see someone who's made progress and progress on a mission, look at Ed Miliband. Now, again, you know, one might disagree, I do, with the ultimate direction or pace that Ed Miliband is taking, but it is certainly the case that he hit the ground running. There are rows this week about pylons in East Anglia. Whatever the intrinsic merits of that case, he is forging ahead in a way which means that there are measurable changes, not all of them welcome, that he's been responsible for. One thing I did want to reflect on was the point that Katie and you made earlier about Nigel Farage as well. I thought it was very significant in the speech that you covered earlier this week, James, that Nigel Farage stoutly resisted the temptation to criticise trade unions. Obviously, one of the big issues in the local elections is the Birmingham bin strike. There are no elections in Birmingham, but it's sort of emblematic of broader issues about delivery. And Nigel Farage has talked about the importance of having a DOGE, a Department of Government Efficiency, in every local government area. So, you know, sounding quite hawkish there. But he didn't attack trade unions. And this, of course, is in the same week when he was explicit about the need for nationalisation of the steel industry, as Katie's column picks up. He's made quite a bit of the running there. And I think he, obviously, it's an easy comparison to make, recognises that Trump in America has managed to secure the adherence of working class voters, that the right in America has, you know, workers on its side and a sort of workers' political economy. And he's trying to do that. And as Katie points out, the vulnerability that Labour are seeking to exploit is to say, look, he's not on your side. This is just affectation. He's trying to lure you in. He's a Pied Piper. And that's why they've gone on the NHS, where some of the things that Nigel Farage and Reform have said in the past run very counter to where the, you know, the basic view of most working class voters is. And then the other thing also is trying to say he's posh, he's a Tory. And in particular, Nigel Farage said in the speech that you covered that he understood steelworkers because he'd worked in the metals industry himself. Well, he did. He was a commodities trader in the City of London. When
it
I
might
said,
not be everyone's interpretation.
Exactly. And when I said to one Labour figure, what was his comment on metals, was it an example of brass neck or a tin ear? The Labour person concerned said, no, it's proof he's a copper-bottomed expletive deleted.
And I'd make the point that the similarity between Trump and Farage potentially is also the importance of getting this kind of reindustrialization. You know, that's his favourite word right now, is getting those blue-collar workers back in, a bit like this kind of Rust Belt states, etc. Katie, this is the final time you and I are doing a podcast together, Coffee House Shots.
Say it isn't so. You never know what the future holds.
Well, as a staff member for the foreseeable, perhaps, you know, never say never, as you know. But I just wanted some of your highlights from doing this podcast for 10 years.
Oh, what a question. The locations, I think. We've recorded these podcasts in some interesting locations. A disabled toilet once. I don't think you were there for that one.
No. But yeah, I remember walking around one of the conferences last year, unable to find any space.
Yeah, once from a very windy beach. I thought it was genius and be atmospheric at Labour Brighton conference. But then that was probably one of the only times. And we have had some pretty ropey audio over the years. Obviously not now, we're very professional.
Professionalisation, it's not just Reform.
Was told, that was the one time I was told it was unusable. Not... That was 20 minutes badly spent. In black cabs, actually, black cabs are amazing for recording podcasts and interviews. I'm not sure if you've had that, Michael. They are almost a mini studio. That is why my black cab bill is partly why it's so high. I think probably the best thing about Coffee House Shots, and obviously there are many good things, is just how responsive we are. Mm. So emergency shots is always fun. And it's calmed down a little bit, which perhaps is why I felt the need to cross an ocean. But the times when would be, you know, this is the third or fourth emergency podcast shot.
Some of those 2022 ones, you know, yeah. Sort of.
Liz and Truss- you recorded it and it changed.
Yeah.
But you still put it out and you did another one.
For me, my favourite one was standing on the roof of Parliament after the bongs of Big Ben in the background at the second reading of the Rwanda. That was wonderful. That was all it was all about.
That was a highlight for me too, James.
Well, good. I know. I'm sure all the London cabbies will miss you very much. But I wanted to say thank you very much for listening to Coffee House Shots. Thank you, Michael. And for the last time with me, thank you, Katie.
Where certain political events happen, of course, is significant because they're a metaphor for so much. And I won't run into what's happened in lots of political loos, but the key thing about a disabled loo is that in government they're known as changing places, facilities. And you're changing places, Kitty. You're going to the US, and we will miss you very, very, very much. But I've also discovered one critical difference in this interview between the political editor and the editor, which is that while the editor travels everywhere by tube and occasionally Uber, the political editor travels everywhere by black cab for broadcasting reasons. All I can say is that I wholeheartedly approve, and I will make sure that your successor only ever travels by licensed London taxi cab. And I'll make sure that as I'm passing home on the District Line, that I recognise that this is a service to journalism.